Hi there, this is Mike Quinn. You'll know me as Nine Numb in Star Wars, and you're listening to the McSauce Podcast.
Welcome to episode 301 of the McSauce Podcast. My name is Paul McGinty. With me, as always, are Ian the Sauce Sharpley.
Hello.
And Matt Tooth Stub Casal.
You had to bring that up. I wasn't even planning on talking about it, Ian, but I have to give the listeners the rundown now. My teeth hurt a lot tonight. I had a little dental work done. The first time we talked about it, I had it done like 2 hours ago, but now it was 8 hours ago. I had done a work done. I had a post implanted into the bone in my upper mouth bone area. What's that called, Ian?
Upper mouth boneulus.
Does that count as your skull?
I don't
know. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Mandible? Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Thank you. Clearly I asked the wrong podcaster here, but yeah, so I had this post implanted into my skull tonight. That sounds so brutal, but you know what, Paul, it is that brutal because my teeth hurt. All my teeth in that vicinity hurt.
Mouth pain has a weird way of working its way to the rest of your body. Like, there's plenty of weird like aches and diseases that you get. And it's like all because of like a rotten tooth.
Yeah, can't you have a heart attack because of a rotten tooth or something like that?
I don't know. I think Jimmy Smits had that on NYPD Blue, if you recall. But
Jimmy Smits did, or his character did?
Well, his character, but I don't remember his character's name. Do you?
No. Bail Organa.
Larry Gani would know. But isn't he doing like a deep dive rewatch of
NYPD Blue?
Bail Organa, you know, on NYPD Blue, died from a heart attack because of a toothache. But no, the reality is with this situation, I had a tooth pulled like 3 years ago, so I have been podcasting with a missing tooth. That's the kind of dedication that I have. I've been podcasting with a missing tooth for 3 years, Ian. And finally today, I have taken, well, these aren't my first steps toward getting it taken care of, but today was a big step. And have you guys ever had a post put in before?
No, not a post. No.
All right, so what they do, because I never did either, but I think you should know this. What they do is they put some kind of thing, like kind of the implant, they drill a hole for them to, you know, put the implant in your skull, in the bone of your skull. Once that is securely in place, they actually add a little extra bone in there. I think it's like cadaver bone or something. So they get it nice and secure in there. Then they put the post inside of that, like the inside of that little implant's like threaded. So then they kind of twist this implant post into it. And you can feel him kind of tightening it as it goes. And then he gets out this like little wrench thing, you know, like a socket wrench. And he puts it on and he starts tightening it. And I can see his hand, you know, like his hand's like pretty much in my mouth, but I can
really
see his hand
cranking it.
And then
his hand is just dripping on your tongue.
Yeah, and then he pulls it back, click, 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 and then tightens it again. It was like, oh my God, it feels like he's tightening like a screw, but my face is being screwed right now, Paul, and it hurts so bad.
Cranking it in Matt's mouth.
The tension that I felt and still feel in my mouth is intense. So if my podcasting skills tonight, Ian, are lacking, I blame the dental work.
Blame it on the
apologies dentist. In advance.
Matt, that's what I always do. Blame it on the dentist.
Matt, I'm glad you're here. You're powering through it. It is Monday night, November 4th, and tonight we are going to cover a little Terminator Dark Fate. We're going to cover, what else are we going to cover? We're going to cover
Watchmen. TV show?
a little HBO's Watchmen, and we're going to cover the Mandalorian trailer that we didn't get to cover last week because when it premiered, we were busy prepping our live episode that we just had, and that leads us into Housekeeping with Ian Sharpley.
Mixus.com, the home of our webcomics and this podcast. You can also check us out on all the social medias. Hit us up on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube. You can hear the podcast a variety of ways. You can hear it on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, any of your normal podcasting spots. You can also hear us on Odyssey1.com Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. If you're looking for that sweet Mixos merch, go to tpublic.com. You can type in MCSOSS. It'll bring up some of the designs. You really want to hit paulmcgintydesign.com. That's the home of all of Paul's lovely artwork, and you can see the full scope of our Mixos gear there. We have two different designs for Mixos Tober, a orange type and logo, and a black type and logo. I'm currently wearing a sweet zip-up hoodie. It's black with orange type and logo on the front. It's pretty awesome. I like it.
Very slick. I didn't know TeePublic had zip-up hoodies, or else I may have gotten one for myself.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Ian, I thought you were looking really good tonight, and then I finally realized it's because, as you pointed out, it's your zip-up hoodie. You look exquisite.
The brand has that ability to just enhance what is already handsome and make it over the top, unbelievably
you were enhancing.
Outstanding. So if you want to get that same level of handsomenesticity...
Handsomosity.
Then head over to TeePublic. Go to these, Paul McGinty Design.
These designs, Ian. Yes. These designs are so good, they can make your tooth pain go away.
I don't know.
There's definitely a disclaimer with that statement.
An asterisk.
Possibly. What could also make your tooth pain go away is a great 300th episode podcast, which is what we had last week. Big thanks to the Brew Gentleman for hosting our podcast there. The Pub Chip Shop was the food truck that was outside that helped us out as well. Delicious. I had some chips and gravy that were delicious. New Dimension Comics and Arkham Gift Shop supplied the gifts for our trivia game, so thank you to them. And a big thank you to everybody that showed up that night and hung out with us, played along, cheered, laughed, heckled.
Asked questions.
Actually, next time we do it, if we do it next time, we're going to change it. We're going to change it. It was a question and answer segment. Next time, it's just going to be a question and insult section, because I feel like we either got questions or we were insulted or we insulted the crowd. So that's what we're going to change it.
A Q&I section.
Yes, it's going to be Q&I. We were questioned whether it really truly was our 300th episode. The news flash, it's our podcast. We can number it however we feel. So... love you, Larry, but you know.
And big thanks to Bill Gust for helping us with the live sound, and a huge thanks to Justin Jarina, who video recorded the entire thing. So at some point, I think within the next week from when you're listening to this, we will have the live video up from the show. It was a great show, and really thanks to everyone for coming out and making it something special for us. And I think Brew Gentleman was really impressed with the turnout, and it was a really great night. It was kind of crappy rainy night, but having everyone come out, be there, support us, be a really great crowd, really made it a really fun exceptional night and a really great way to spend our 300th episode.
Can you believe that? 300 episodes. That means, Ian, you have been doing podcasts since 2013, the beginning of 2013.
I remember whenever we first got together, to talk about doing a podcast, and I want to say it was one of the first times that I met you, and I was like, well, oh, I'm going to be doing this thing for 300 episodes plus with this character here.
You didn't know how
Who
much...
Who knew? How many teeth he could lose? How many...
One. The answer was one.
I've lost... Since we have started this podcast, Ian, I have lost one tooth. I mean, I could go on and on. And, you know, it's funny. I didn't want to reminisce too much in episode 300 because, you know, it was live and that might kill the live vibe. But I do think it's worth taking a second just to reflect and just acknowledge the 300 episodes that we've done and, like, just the shit that's happened in our lives since then and just the fact that we've been able to legitimately do this podcast together in person over the last, if it's 2013, it's like 6+ years.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with something right there with in person. We don't Skype this in. Not to denigrate anybody that Skypes or phone calls. That is awesome,
but
too.
But your pussies.
But yeah, step your game up. I know some of you live in different states. I'm looking at you, Black Rob. But we get together and we make a point to sit down here, and we're lucky enough that our jobs allow and our social lives allow and our work schedule allow us to get together every Monday night and create this piece of art for everybody to listen to for 6 fucking years. It's pretty impressive.
It's actually over 6.5 years. And you know what, Ian? I mean, I realize you're saying that we've got flexible enough jobs to do it, but the reality is I feel like we have sort of made like this such a priority that we're kind of like having our jobs work around this. And I think that that's part of the energy that makes the podcast so good is the in-person. I mean, we've got a great catalog of 300 episodes. I mean, some aren't that great, Paul. Obviously,
to Paul.
Well, the episodes that you were not present for, which is like 2.
Shockingly low. Yeah.
Yeah. I think what I take away most from this entire podcast experience is really just the social aspect of being able to hang out with you guys at least once a week and get this done. You know, doing the podcast, having other people listen to the podcast and everything is great, but being able to sit down with you guys and just talk about whatever, you know, once a week. I love just the social aspect. I absolutely love the drinking aspect. It gives me an excuse to get drunk every Monday. And I really appreciate you guys. And these 300 episodes have been an absolute wonderful experience.
It is funny that you mentioned it, Ian, that we really didn't even know each other that well when we started it. But you know, obviously I'm your best friend now and
100%. I mean, I usually like my friends with all of their teeth, but
I'm not an exception. I'm not even Ian's best friend.
But I mean, we've gotten close, the three of us. I mean, we've taken trips out of state, across the state. We've interviewed some pretty, like, at least in the circles that we run in, some pretty fucking like cool, you know, characters, and done some live shows. Think of like the charities that we've done, the Toys for Tots. We've raised thousands of dollars for that. I mean, we have done, we have done some pretty cool shit in those 6.5 years, in those 300 episodes.
And like I said, all of our travels, we have met a shit ton of really cool people, people that we are friends with via their podcast. We are friends with via meeting them at conventions. It would be silly to try to name everyone, but you all know who you are. Friends of the show. Means a lot to us that we've been able to use this to like outstretch the tendrils of McSauce.
Can I
touch each and every one of you?
Go ahead, Matt.
Can I put you on the spot, guys? I'm going to ask each of you. So we've done 300 episodes. Uh-oh. Ian, I know that you have said repeatedly you want to at least get to, you know, 1,500 episodes before you retire. But I would like to know.
I did put a cap on it. Though.
I think you said like, it with your eyes.
We talked you down from 2000.
I think I said 300, and so everything after this,
it's just all gravy.
So it's going to be a lot of gravy.
What? Okay, so I was going to say, what would you like to see in the next 300? Do you have a goal? Would there be something that would be kind of a high watermark for you personally? It could be like somebody on the show, or maybe even where the show could lead you, like via conventions or something like that.
I'd like to do more live stuff. I really had fun doing that. I'd like to maybe do it in a larger venue. Not that where we've been doing them has been really good, but I just think that we could fill up more spaces. That's the main thing that I think that I'd like to do is more live
stuff. Paul?
I'd also like to do more live stuff, but I think I'd like to keep doing what we've been doing and just keep the quality that we want the show to be, to keep creating an entertaining show that we like. All the time when you hear entertainers and whoever talk about, what the creators talk about, what they're creating, they all say, create what you want to create. Like, that's what's going to make it most important. Don't bend your style to what you think other people want. Do what you want to do. And I think for these 300 episodes, we've really done what we've wanted to do, and I want to keep doing that because it makes me happy. And I think it makes the three of us happy. And clearly it makes other people happy too, because we have a great group of listeners. We had a really great group show up for 300. and maybe some of them just showed up for the hell of it, but I think we have a good group of listeners that like what we're doing, and I would just want to keep doing what we're doing and just get better and better and just take it to new places.
Yeah, the podcast that we do is absolutely a podcast that if it wasn't us, I would listen to. The way that we approach topics, the interaction that we have with each other, and that's something that I think is fun to, if you would go through, listeners, and pick out a single digit episode, an episode in the hundreds, an episode in the 200s, and just listen to the way that we interact with us, listen to the sound quality, but just in the different topics that we have evolved and covered. I think that it is interesting, and I like the way in the curve of the show and the direction that we're going. And it's just fun to think about where we started, how volatile we pretty much were for the first 100 episodes. We almost wanted to kill each other every week, and how we've kind of settled into a groove.
Yeah, it's come a long way, and there has been a show curve from those early episodes to where we're at now. There's been time differences, topic differences,
a few different studio changes,
volatility differences, studio changes, like there has been an arcing change through the whole show, and it's going to keep being organic, and we're going to let it do what it does.
I would love, I'm going to say over the course of the next 300 episodes, just so that way it gives us a little wiggle room, I would love for us to get a little bit more video content going. I know we've talked about doing it in the past, but none of us have really kind of quite mastered that videography aspect to what we do. But just given how popular YouTube has become, we're maybe missing out a little bit. So I'd love to explore that frontier a little bit and kind of get going there.
The undiscovered country.
Well, that's the sad thing. It's discovered by everyone except Nick Sauce.
Matt, why don't we shift out of our appreciation for doing 300 episodes,
our appreciation for ourselves,
and lean into,
as Harvey Keitel once said, let's not start sucking each other's dicks quite yet.
Well, in that case, why don't you lean into the dick of Terminator Dark Fate?
I don't want to lean into that dick.
Uh-oh. Hot takes.
But you did anyway.
I did. It had its way with
me. It wasn't going to be good, but you were like,
I was pretty sure, Paul.
And before you get into it, Ian's going to see it in the next couple days. I'll see it eventually once it's on HBO or whatever.
So this is going to be like a not total spoiler free, but you know, like
should be spoiler free. Yeah.
I would say light spoilers, stuff you probably already know mm-hmm. based on previews and so forth. But what I will say is the overarching takeaway from this movie is it was wildly unnecessary. I couldn't believe how unnecessary it was. And the reason is because as much as Ian, you saw Terminator Genesis, right?
I did it in the theater.
How do you spell Genesis, by the way?
It's like J-Y-G-S-Y-S-Z.
You're close. It was even worse than that. But Terminator Genesis, Ian, I think we're in agreement, like one of the worst movies ever.
It was pretty bad.
It was terrible.
Pretty bad.
It was like recycling parts from Terminator 2 that, but like this time a lot less cool. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? Dark Fate kind of does the same thing.
Can we not get a threatening Terminator outside of...
No.
Jason Patrick.
No.
Yeah, I mean, he was legitimately threatening. So, I don't know.
The reason...
So, who's the guy in this new one? In his gimmick, his Terminator gimmick, is that he can, like... He has
Jason
his
Patrick Black.
He is like
he is sort of like a skeleton, and he is like an exoskeleton.
Yeah, that's
so
stupid.
he can separate himself into two separate Terminators.
Yeah, dumb.
But it feels like maybe I'm wrong, but it kind of feels like when the skeleton Terminator is just by itself, it's a little bit weaker.
Yeah.
That was just sort of the vibe I got. It was never expressly talked about in the movie or anything, but I just kind of got that sense. He definitely seemed more put together, so to speak, when he was all one.
Not a very threatening actor either.
No, not at all. This was definitely like let's see what pretty Hollywood types we can put in these roles.
What would it be like if a nerd came back from the future?
Right, like make Ian Sharpley the next Terminator, and
hey,
then
that
I would be scared.
Cool.
It just lacked, like, this Terminator in this movie didn't have that sort of like, still robotic kind of vibe. I realize they're trying to establish that the technology is advancing to the point where it's almost indistinguishable from human.
The Terminator is Gabriel Luna, who is a fairly sort of well-known actor, but I feel like he's a little soft. That role needs more
murder robot
gravitas.
Like, what role did he play in other things?
He was a Ghost Rider in S.H.I.E.L.D., which was easily the 6 best episodes S.H.I.E.L.D. has ever had. He was really fucking good as Robbie Reyes. Like, he was outstanding.
That's a garbage TV show. Nobody watched it.
Yeah, I mean, there were 6 best episodes of...
Mama's Family.
Right, exactly.
Look, my point is...
that he has acted before, and he will act again. And that's how he got that role, because it was pseudo-skeleton.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Bullshit.
Right, my point is that role needs... someone heavy duty, someone with some clout, someone mm-hmm. that can
Austrian.
Really bring the heat to that role. And I don't think he's really it. That would be like, you know, I don't know, like casting Pedro Pascal. He's just doesn't have the heat that he should.
It'd be like, yeah, the white truth.
He's not
as Terminator.
Not as threatening as he should be.
Yeah, it was kind of a shame that all these actors are essentially playing the same roles that we saw in either Terminator 1 or Terminator 2. Only this time they were doing it with characters that had infinitely less chemistry, or not chemistry. Well, a little bit chemistry, but charisma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's just like Joaquin Phoenix as the Joker, whenever Arnold as the Terminator was on screen back in like the Terminator 2 days, you couldn't take your eyes off him. It was like a treat the entire time. And these characters are doing the same shit we've seen, but this time you don't give a crap about them the whole time. Like, I'm actively rooting against certain characters because I don't like the it's just a horribly miscast movie, and it's horribly unnecessary. Sure, some of the fights and stuff was kind of cool. There was a part when Arnold, or I don't want to spoil, but a Terminator or something shoots another Terminator, like point blank in the face with a machine gun, looked kind of cool. But I was like, oh yeah, Arnold Schwarzenegger did that to the T-1000 in Terminator 2, and it was way cooler when he did it.
Oh, you ruined it.
Was it a callback, though? Is that why it's supposed to resonate?
I don't think so, Paul, because the reason why I would say that is because if that was a callback, then that's all the movie is. There is legitimately time and time and time again where it's pulling from previous like things right, that happened so in the other movies.
Here's my question. Terminator has essentially had two really good movies and a bunch of stinky to middling ones.
And a decent TV show. Sarah Connor Chronicles was pretty fucking good because it had to be really stripped down.
Brian Austin.
And it had to be, him too. Summer Glau was really good at it.
Did I love those posters.
She was a lady Terminator. Terminate your heart on right
Yikes.
There. But yeah, that show was really good because it was streamlined, simplified. It didn't rely on the newest and latest Terminator tricks. It just relied on the lore of Terminator.
So my question is, do we need to keep trying to make Terminator a franchise? Because it doesn't look like it is.
Well, I would say no, because if you think about it, after the first two movies, it was clearly out of ideas. It's a two-movie franchise. Every movie since then has just been like kind of a regurgitation of what we've seen before. Terminator Salvation notwithstanding, we know that that's kind of its own thing. Takes place in the future.
You can only send Terminators back so many times without you being like, they're going to get her one of these times.
Right?
One would think. But yeah, Salvation. You
might be onto something there, no, Mr. Sharpley. I don't know.
One of these times, you know, Eric Bynes' terrible acting isn't going to be there to save her.
But Salvation was interesting because it's the only one that takes place after Judgment Day. I thought that's fertile ground to explore what the future looks like, what the war looks like, all of that good stuff.
Yeah, well, they always showed little clips of it in all the other movies. I think Terminator 2 opens with the war. I can't remember if T1 opened that way or not.
No, T1 was flashbacks, right? Or no, you're right. It does open with the war, doesn't it?
I can't remember, but I know that T2 opens with the war. And I don't mean to spoil anything, Ian, but this new movie opens with the future war as well.
Oh, no.
And it's always really cool. And then you see it in Terminator Salvation, and it kind of sucked.
Yeah, it wasn't as good.
Right.
It
was like, why didn't you just take what you put in T2 in the first 5 minutes and do that for 2 hours? Why was that so hard?
Too expensive.
It's just this franchise, and we're using air quotes here, Paul, this franchise cannot get out of its own way. It's out of ideas. It's been out of ideas since 91. It needs to be done. I don't ever want to see another Terminator.
Maybe, yeah, and that's why I'm asking. Maybe it's not a franchise. Maybe it's time.
It never was. Is it a two movie thing? Is that a franchise?
No.
Okay. It never was a franchise.
Wait, time out. Yes, because Ghostbusters is a franchise, right?
We're really gonna have to dig into the definition of franchise because Ghostbusters has only had one movie since, one movie coming out, and a really successful cartoon.
So let's rewind back to episode one of Mix Sauce in 2013. Would we consider Ghostbusters a franchise in 2013? I think we would.
I think Ghostbusters should be considered a franchise because it hasn't proven yet that the ground is dead.
That's an interesting point. Right, whereas Terminator has proven that they die, they're DOA after 91.
Every movie they release, everyone's like, meh, this kind of stunk.
But I still think, like, be it good franchise or bad franchise, Terminator is still a franchise. They're still going to, no matter what the box office looks like, they're still going to make another Terminator.
All right, they might not actually, because this movie made like $27 million opening weekend.
Oh, boy.
And that's one
Godzilla
thing.
Godzilla money.
Right. That, and if there's one thing we here at McSauce learned, we learned what is a success at the box office.
I guess my question should be rephrased from, is this a franchise to, is it time to put this franchise to bed?
Well, that's the point, Paul. Yeah. This, it was time 25 years ago. It's just out of, it's completely, you'll see, it's completely out of ideas.
Yeah. And no, I mean, I kind of get that, even though I don't know, like, I don't feel like I was such a huge Terminator guy back in the day, but maybe I was, maybe it was that mix of like those where I fondly remember watching Alien, Terminator, Predator with my dad. Those were some of the first like elevated, like more mature movies that I watched.
They're very
and
mature.
I just loved all those movies. And when I graduated into reading comic books, Terminator, RoboCop, Alien, Predator, those were the Dark Horse stuff in the comic shop. And I was like, oh, wow, that's cool that they, you know, continue
Dark Horse
on.
Comics used to talk about, like, have you read a good movie lately or something like that. That used to be their tagline.
And, like, they made, like, killer Terminator stuff. I remember reading some of that stuff, and it was pretty good. And
all Terminator stuff is killer, Ian.
Like that joke. Matt, why don't you give us your final score for Terminator Dark Fate?
I'm going to give it a 5. I think that...
Middle of the road. Perfectly passable.
Is that how many Terminators are?
There's 6 of them. It was...
Give it a 6.
No, it doesn't deserve that. It barely deserves a 5.
And give it a 4.
Why
don't... From episode 300 out, why don't we start... Why don't we start really giving movies...
Being more negative than we already are.
What they should deserve.
Okay, and okay, let's try
it. Well, it barely gets a 5.
Can I start over with
4.
That? We're going to give it what it deserves. This was a 2.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And that's only because it reminds me of a turd. A stinky turd. It was... Listen, this movie was so unnecessary. And it offered nothing new. It was like, let's do this, but just different characters that you don't care about and have no, like, star quality whatsoever. There's nothing about them that makes you want to root for them. When I, as an audience member, am actively rooting against them just because they're annoying me, and the only thing that I enjoy are the legacy characters, like Sarah Connor or the, you know, we know Arnold's in it. When they're on the screen, I'm like kind of invested, but it's all the new characters.
I'm excited to see which new characters you're speaking of. Is it all of them?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Ian, I can't wait until you love this movie.
I don't think I am.
I don't think he is.
I don't think I am.
If he likes it, then...
Then we got problems. No, yeah. I don't think I'm going to like it going in. But I'm going to see it.
It's not as bad as like it could have been. We know how bad it could be with Terminator Genisys, right? We've seen the depths that this franchise can go. It's not that. It's definitely better, but it just proved once and for all this franchise needs to die. It needs to be terminated, if you will, Ian.
Is there a different way that we could do Terminator shit? You know what I mean? Like, is there a thing that we could do with this fucking franchise?
Not really. I think that the premise has always been the same. Two warriors are sent back in time, one to kill somebody and one to protect them. Or have sex with them. Do you remember when Arnold had sex with young John Connor?
Oh, God, it was so hot.
Stabbing
weapons, indeed.
Yeah, so no, I don't think there's anything else we can do with it. It's been the same formula. The first two were cool because the second one kind of flips what the first one did. But after that, it's like there's nothing to do anymore. It's done. It's over.
Is it that Terminator exoskeleton, the that warrior, and that the look is just too fucking cool looking that people won't let it go?
I think so. And let me tell you something that this movie, as much as it was trying so hard to replicate, you know, like by taking all these things that happen in T1 and T2 and giving it to you with a more handsome actor, what it was unable to achieve was what made, I think, Terminator 2 a very like powerful movie was Sarah Connor and her relationship with her son. It's non-existent in this movie. And like her maternal protector instinct in that movie was so strong and such a driving force of the movie, and it's just gone. And without it, Sarah Connor is not that important anymore. She's just an angry woman that, you know, has arguably aged. No, she's aged okay. How old is she?
She's up there. She's in her 60s, right?
Oh, she's aged quite well.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that she can carry a bazooka or whatever she's doing.
Such an interesting character, though. Like, look at her in T1 and then what she evolved into, this fucking warrior, mm-hmm. because she knew that this war was coming and she had to train her son, and she turned herself into like the most badass of women ever, not women, the most badass to turn her son into a badass. And like,
I never feel like we actually got to see the badass John Connor. Like, do you feel like even the Christian Bale version was good enough? Like,
no,
is Eddie Furlong, you know, that kid.
No,
I wish they would have fucking murdered him.
You know, I agree that he was super annoying, but there's just a, I don't know what it is. There was something about him that was memorable. Maybe he was just so annoying. That was what I remembered. But, or the fact that I saw it when I was like 11 and Eddie Furlong, I think, was a couple years older. And I was like, kid got kind of a cool haircut.
So why don't we shift gears to another quote-unquote franchise that maybe doesn't need to be a franchise, but people keep making into new shit. The Watchmen. Matt, you haven't seen Watchmen on HBO.
I didn't. I saw the trailers or the trailer whenever that released, and I was like, that doesn't look like Watchmen at all.
Because it isn't.
And I wasn't real interested, and I don't have HBO, and I just don't care. Should I?
So what is, can we quickly review our Watchmen history? Matt, you ever read Watchmen?
Not all of it, no, but I saw the movie. I know the differences between the movie and the book from what I've heard. I think it's good. I don't see it as like the quintessential, the essential comic book reading that it seems to be portrayed as. But that's just a matter of taste. Like I think it's good. I think it's pretty overrated, honestly.
Paul, your experience with Watchmen?
I read all of Watchmen, but I feel the same way Matt does. I love the main storyline. I think the main through line with Night Owl and Ozymandias and Dr. Manhattan, I think that main storyline is pretty good. I don't think it's the be-all, end-all of comic book stories, but all the other stuff about like the history of that world and the Black Freighter, it's all fucking... It's so hard to get through. I hated it. But I like all those regular characters, which is why when DC started rolling out this Doomsday Clock thing, I was interested, because we get a close version of the original Rorschach. We get the Dr. Manhattan back. Adrian Veidt is back. So, like, it's the characters that I care about in another story.
Right. For me, I read Watchmen probably a little bit later. I didn't read it in the 80s. It was probably 98 or something whenever I made my return to comic books. I left for probably about 3 years, and I came back with Preacher, Watchmen, Punisher.
A triumphant return.
I didn't read it.
Did you walk through like a fog machine?
And finally, Ian has returned.
Ian Sharpley makes his long-awaited return to reading comic books.
I kicked the door in at Phantom of the Attic. There's like smoke and steam.
I love it.
And it was dramatic. It was really cool. People were waiting for it.
And did they all gather around you as you sat down to read this comic book?
They did. They did. And they were cheering me on.
And then,
give give me Gatorade.
And then as you close the book, you finally finish reading it. Everybody's quiet and kind of, you know, coming around you to see like, well, what did you think? What did he say?
What does he think?
What did Ian say after he finished reading it?
And power bars to get through all that black freighter tripe.
I loved Watchmen. I disagree with you guys wholeheartedly. I think it is a triumph in the comic book medium. I think it's as good as everybody says it is. I think that the choices that are made in it, from the panel layout to the type of the color treatment to the long form, exhaustive Black Freighter stuff, all the additional stuff that only adds to the story and makes it a rich, it's very dense, but it's that is the point of it. And I think that it is rightly a turning point in comic books. Now, do we all love the dark and gritty stuff that came out of it, that combined with the Dark Knight Returns? I know you guys also aren't fans of that.
I like the Dark Knight Returns.
You know, you do?
Yeah, 301 episodes, Ian. I think you would know this by now. We are not the same person, me and Paul.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, I stand corrected. I think that all of the things that happened in the 90s that were connected to those two books, where everything became dark and gritty, I don't think that that's a good turn for comics, but I think what it represented in those stories that stand alone are great works of art. And I don't know, man, maybe it's just me, but I like to see my heroes or not so much my heroes, but I like a little bit of realism in my fiction. I like people to react to things in a realistic manner. And I think that Rorschach being a complete psychopath is something that's realistic. I think that the way that Adrian Veidt handles the way that, spoilers, handles the way that he tells everybody about the plan, and he was like, oh, I did that an hour ago, there's no way that you can stop me, I think was a little bit groundbreaking for that kind of storytelling.
I'm surprised.
That storyline is great.
But you're just talking about the story, the storytelling, the realism. You're not mentioning the art, and you're being such an art guy. This is simple nine-panel grid.
Well, I think I graced on it, too, with like the panel layout and the nine-panel structure of the book, the colors. I think I mentioned like the way that that book is colored as well, I think, is really dynamic.
Yeah, it's nice coloring, and, you know, it's good art, but it's... Maybe I'm wrong. I thought I understood your artistic kind of proclivities a little bit more than I do, but I thought you liked a little bit more dynamism in your art. That's pretty stiff stuff.
I do, and maybe it just falls in with... I know Steve Dillon has a very similar style as well on Preacher, and I think that those two kind of run in tandem. They look very similar if you pair pages up against one another.
Preacher didn't
like
follow a nine-panel grid, though, correct?
No. But when you're talking about art, it's like maybe a little bit stiff. I know
stiff. Steve Dillon, a bit samey. Like
same faces and stuff like that. I wouldn't say that Dave Gibbons has same faces, but those two art styles are a little similar, I think. And going back and looking at some of the stuff from Watchmen, I think it's just like the anatomy is really good.
His style reminds me of like wood etching or something like that.
You think so?
There's something to it, like his line work. I feel like it's not like these steady lines. It's a lot of like smaller lines that make up the definition. Not to get too nerdy and into art talk.
That's what people come for. I have as I think we all do, I like a variety of art styles. I like some Alex Maleev. I like some...
You like Alex Maleev?
I do like Alex.
We don't know each other at all, Ian.
No. I think that we usually just don't talk about it because I know you guys violently hate Alex Maleev.
I used to hate it a lot more than I do now. I kind of can appreciate it for what it is when it appears in a, you know, kind of a urban, gritty Brian Michael Bendis crime story. Okay, it makes sense, but
I like his stuff as much as I like a nice clean Bruce Timm line. So I have,
you like Bruce Timm as much as Alex Maleev.
I can appreciate
you hold them both in the same
I do
esteem.
Like, I would say that I have found Alex Maleev's work on Moon Knight, I thought, was some of the best stuff that I've ever read. So, I mean, I put it up against any other comic book that's out there, and I like it a lot.
Any other ever?
Yeah, I like it a lot. Yeah, it's something that I really, really like.
Clearly, he's never read NFL Super Pro.
So, enough comics talk. I just wanted to give a brief overview of where we stood on the initial property Watchmen, because I know that we come from a bunch of different places where you're, Matt, you're a little dismissive. Paul, as always, you're pretty dismissive. And I really like Watchmen. So, with this show, Matt, you don't have HBO, you're not really interested, you don't like TV, and you don't like Watchmen, so strike three, you're out, right?
Yeah, I didn't... The Watchmen has never been a property that I have sought out. When the movie came out, I thought it looked really good. It looked like, you know, the page was coming to life, as Zack Snyder is really good at doing, and I think it didn't disappoint. I thought it was a very good movie. I haven't seen it in years. I'm thinking it doesn't hold up like I probably think it does.
I watched it this weekend.
Okay.
I think that if you would break it up into four separate parts and think of it as a TV show, it works way better than just like one big sprawling movie.
Interesting.
It still works pretty good. I would hold the intro scene with Times They Are a Change in playing in the background as they go through in slow motion and show all the history of the Watchmen up to the point where you join them in the film. All that stuff is some of the best. I think that's the best stuff that Zack Snyder's ever done. That might be some of my favorite comics work put to screen out there. It's really cool. It's really good the way that it all falls. It tells a story really quickly without any kind of exposition. It's just all images that you're watching and you get it all, and it packs a lot of information into a small, probably 3-minute chunk. So I thought it held up pretty good. It's still Zack Snyder. He's a stylish director. All that stuff still looks dynamite. So the movie, if you like Watchmen like I do, or you like kind of stylish comic book movies, it still holds up.
I haven't seen it in a long while. I think I watched a good bit of it on TV a couple years ago, and it's fine. Like, I thought it was cool. Like, I think that the main storyline in the comic book is cool, and that's what they tackle in the movie. And it was almost like panel for panel, so that was also cool. But like, it's nothing that has ever really gotten my dick hard. Going into this HBO series, I'm like,
well, you knew that it wasn't going to... Did you know going in that it wasn't going to be... Did you hear anything? Because I knew going in, I was like, oh, this isn't going to be... This isn't a retelling of the old story. This is a continuation of the story. 30 years later, what would the world look like?
I would have been more excited if they were like, hey, we're finally going to do what they should have done with Watchmen and not try to cram this gigantic book into a 2.5-hour movie. We're going to give it the Game of Thrones treatment. We're going to let it breathe. We're going to give these characters like room to grow and build and develop. And, you know, we're just going to have a new sprawling HBO series. But then I hear, oh, this happens like 30 years after Watchmen. And I'm like, God damn it. Like, I barely give a shit about Night Owl and Rorschach. Why am I going to give a shit about brand new characters? Like, everyone I give a shit about is maybe sort of dead.
Sounds like the Terminator franchise.
Like, why do I care about, like, all these new people? So, yeah, that cut the legs out of me being interested in watching Watchmen. But I heard there's so much positivity since that debut episode. Everyone online seems to love it. So whenever you ask, hey, oh, did you see Watchmen? I was like, oh, I'll check it out. Like, I've heard enough buzz. I'll check it out. So I watched it today.
That's all you got? You'd watch it today?
Yeah, I watched it today, and it was about as adequate as I expected it to be. It was fine. It was like, Ian, I think you really gravitate toward, like you said, like you like a realism with your superheroes.
I like them to add, I like realism in all, like, I like realistic reactions to things. Like, I want a character that has been built on screen or on the page to just react in a realistic
Ian fashion. Hates comedies.
and what I'm talking about, it doesn't need to stick to 100% things that could possibly happen. What I'm talking about, because we're talking about a show that has a blue god that walks around and changes matter. I'm not talking about...
But like, that does... That has... I mean, I've only seen one episode. He's, that has no bearing in the show. You, there's a little TV clip
there.
In it.
He's there. He's in the show. I've watched three episodes. You don't physically see him, but people interact with what it would be like. And it's funny whenever
there
I
are,
think
there
about
are references
it.
To him.
Well, he's shaped this world. There's a lot of things in the world. Just the
so
fact,
did Adrian Veidt. Just right. as much as Dr. Manhattan did.
True, but there's a...
But there no
are,
one's...
There are telephone booths throughout the world where you can talk to Dr. Manhattan and leave him messages because he's a god that's walking among men. And this gets back to a conversation that we had episodes ago whenever we talked about if there were superheroes in the world, how would you react? And your reaction was, oh, my life wouldn't change at all. And I was like, there would be an existential problem in all of our lives because there would be fucking gods walking around and it would shape all of society. So that is what is the reaction. Not only that, but what Adrian Veidt did and with essentially putting a massive hoax and killing 3 million people by sending a psychic squid through time to smash on Manhattan, that has repercussions that reverberate to the show right. today. And I enjoy seeing like alternate history stuff and even the real history that they play on in the show. But talking about seeing realism, like I want a realistic reaction from characters. Rorschach being a complete fucking psychopath and what he does with his manifesto that has reverberations where there's an entire cult of people that spring up in the wake of his manifesto saying that, hey, all of this stuff that has shaped this world is a lie. Of course those fucking people would spring up.
And that's great. And you love all of this stuff built out of the first story of Watchmen. But I've only seen one episode. Maybe this changes. But all the stuff that I love from comic books and superheroes happened in Watchmen. It is. We see the god doing godlike things. We see the crazy smart Adrian Veidt doing super villain things. Like we see all the superhero stuff. All the super stuff has already happened. And now like it's like we're living in a world where the super is gone and now we're stuck with the remains of what happens once they're gone.
But even in Watchmen, you weren't doing that. You were seeing a bunch of retired costume heroes come out, like, brush their costumes out of the mothballs and come in. It wasn't really even all that. You saw some flashbacks of some people that might have done some cool things, and oh, we won the Vietnam War.
Which also ties into why I don't really like Watchmen.
Yeah. I don't know.
So like
I don't need
there's that like in I the don't first need... episode there's that dude in the red thing and he's Russian something or other and I'm
red
like
scare.
Oh what the fuck is this guy's power?
Nothing.
Probably
he's
just
Russian.
Shooting rifles.
Well, no, in this
and
world
and same with Sister Knight. What's her superpower? Just karate.
Yeah, and
that's guns.
Another...
I'm sorry. What?
I'm sorry. Just karate and guns.
And that's another thing. Like I don't need all everybody to be super powered. It can be a street level kind of thing. And Red Scare and Sister Knight, they're just cops. They're cops in this world. So they don't have any powers. And there isn't anybody that has any powers outside of Dr.
Manhattan.
So
you liked this show. You liked it.
Yeah, I did like this show.
That's great.
So, yeah. So I would recommend Watchmen. I enjoy, like I said, I like there are some history elements of this show. They talk about the massacre of Black Wall Street in Tulsa, I think is interesting. And they also tie it in with some with adjusted future history, alternate history with what? Robert Redford being president
for like
20 years and what that would do to the world. It changes around the way that police officers have to be the masked heroes now as well. I think it's an interesting look at the world we live in today, reflected on the things that happened in Watchmen. So I would recommend it to people.
I know it's
not you guys' cup of
tea. How does it compare stylistically, tonality-wise, like to the movie?
It's funny you ask that. In the second episode, there is a TV show that's popular in this universe called American Hero Story. And it's about all of the Minutemen and the Watchmen from the 70s, 50s, and 40s. And it's in one of the episodes they cover the hooded what's the guy's
Hooded
name?
Justice?
Hooded Justice. Hooded Justice was one of the first guys. Wore a red suit. He was a German bodybuilder, had a noose around his neck. And in that episode of this TV show, inside the TV show, it's filmed as if it's like the Zack Snyder Watchmen, with a lot of slow-mo and hyper-violence and everything like that. I would say the show itself is not like that. It's more like The Leftovers, if you've seen that show, which is also a Damon Lindelof show. There's action and everything, but it isn't the hyper stylized thing that the movie was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the pilot's really well done as far as HBO shows. It's very well created. It's very well written. It's very smart the way they tie real history and future history together. Lindelof's a big Watchmen fan, so he takes a lot of care in building out what this world would be 40 years later. It's a very smartly written, well done show, but I just don't think it's scratching the itches I want out of a quote unquote superhero show, because it isn't really. Watchmen, the book isn't really.
And I guess that's what I like about, like, I don't want it to be a superhero show. I don't want anybody to fly around.
And like Preacher wasn't a superhero book or a superhero show either, but Preacher scratches a lot of bizarre itches for me, like, just because Jesse Custer does have superpowers and it is hyper gory and violent and just sexual, and like Preacher really pushes different buttons for me, and that Watchmen just doesn't. Like Watchmen is just, it's ultimately just kind of boring to me.
So
speaking of something that's going to be kind of boring, let's shift gears to The Mandalorian. Matt, why don't you lead us off, buddy?
So last Monday, when we didn't record, Ian, because we were preparing for the big 300th episode.
Huge 300th.
It was huge. We were getting ready for it, and we were still together that Monday night, as we are every Monday night, but instead of recording, we were preparing. What we weren't prepared for, though, Paul, was the Mandalorian trailer that dropped, like, not even during halftime on Monday Night Football, just during a commercial break. And this 2.5-minute trailer drops for The Mandalorian, and we were just like, we immediately stopped talking, and we were paralyzed enough to not be able to smartly turn up the volume. Instead, we just tried to listen harder.
Huh?
But
what did he say?
So this trailer comes on, and we were all pretty captivated, I feel. I feel like more unanimously we're into The Mandalorian than the Watchmen TV show. You know, the Watchmen TV show is not about to make me splurge on HBO Max. However, the one and only thing that I give a crap about for Disney Plus is The Mandalorian, and I'm going to get it because of that stupid show. I do not want another streaming service. I don't think that this should even be a show. It should be a really cool movie, but hey, that's how we're getting it.
Ultimately, Matt, you don't think anything should be shows.
Well, I wouldn't say that. That's untrue. But I do think that You know, Star Wars has a track record of making movies. And usually, to me at least, they're usually pretty good. When you start getting into show territory, I start to worry that you lose the fantasy element and it becomes more of a sci-fi thing. It becomes a little more Star Trek with, like, more action. I don't want that. I'm nervous about that. With all that said, this looks pretty good.
Ian?
I agree with everything that Matt just said.
Yeah, this looks like, I mean, it looks cool. It does look cool. But I think what I've really come to terms with over the last year or so is that this isn't strictly Star Wars. Like, this has to do with a lot of properties, like
LA Kings hockey.
Like, I mean maybe, like, I don't really care about the Watchmen universe. Like, I care about
that's great, because I don't think they're in The Mandalorian
and Adrian V. Like, am I really gonna care about the Ghostbusters universe if Ray Stantz and Peter Venkman aren't there? Like, do I really care about the Star Wars universe without Han, Luke, and Leia? I don't think I do. Like, it's the characters that I want to see. Like, I don't really give a shit about what happens in the rest of the Star Wars universe. Like, I like those characters. I like specific characters. Like, I don't really care about the world.
See, I do like looking at the world and how the universe functions. Like, I really liked Rogue One. Out of all these recent Star Wars movies, Rogue One's probably the one that's going to stand the test of time for my enjoyment, where all these other movies in the Skywalker, you know, quadrilogy or whatever the fuck we're at right now, they're all connected and they all depend on each other.
You know, it's interesting.
Rogue One kinda stands alone and is not about a lot of the things that we hold near and dear with Star Wars. Yeah. Even if you take Darth Vader out, I really like Rogue One.
It's interesting that you say that, because I think Rogue One is clearly the most fan servicey one of the four new movies that they've made to this point, right? Well, The Mandalorian,
more so than The Force Awakens, which is a direct remake of A New Hope?
I think so, because there are so many direct callbacks and characters, whereas as much as The Force Awakens tried to do it in spirit and storyline and everything, this was doing it in things that you kind of already knew. You know, we saw, like, even Walrus Man and Dr. Evazan in this movie.
That doesn't make it for any of us here.
I mean, I enjoy little things like that. I think those are kind of neat little things, especially for ancillary stuff, which I look at all of this new Star Wars crap as ancillary. I look at it as just kind of like padding out the main saga. And for the stuff that's going to pad out the main saga, I'm fine with fan service. I think that that's what this show is going to give us a lot of. I mean, let's face it. The main character itself looks like one of the coolest, you know, Star Wars characters. It's got Bosks in it, not really Bosk. It's got IG-88 in it, not really IG-88. It's got Agnolty in it. That was weird, by the way.
Nick Nolte's brother.
Well, no, Nick Nolte is voicing that Ugnaught. That was strange, by the way, in that trailer.
I didn't even pick up that was Nick Nolte. That is strange.
Like, I had heard he was in it, and then I see that trailer, I'm like, that's fucking Nick Nolte.
Weirdest thing in that trailer is Bill Burr. Because I didn't catch it the first time I watched it, and then I saw, like, a still frame on Twitter a couple days ago, and I was like, this is a joke, right? Like, this character sort of looks like Bill Burr, and someone put Bill Burr's head on it. And then I did a little research. I was like, oh my God, Bill Burr is in The Mandalorian.
Bill Burr might be able to do it. I mean, he's got, like, I think he's got some animation experience, you know.
He was in episodes of Breaking Bad.
Was he? Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, whatever.
As Bill Burr?
I don't...
As a comedian?
As a cable guy, or as a hitman posing as a cable guy.
I feel like they wouldn't have put him in it if he couldn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're questioning that Bill Burr can act. I think that
No, that's exactly what I'm doing.
Oh, I was gonna. I was questioning
if Bill Burr can act.
I'm sure he'll be.
He's
fine.
He's acted. It's, so yeah.
The main thing is that you look at it and you're like, that's Bill Burr in Star Wars.
Right, and I'm not seeing like any prosthetic. Like, at least for Nick Nolte, they're like, okay, dude, you're going to be an Ugnaught because we can't have Nick Nolte running around in Star Wars. But even like Woody Harrelson is in Star Wars, and
yeah, he was fine.
He kind of blended in. Like, it wasn't like a fucking.
Yeah.
I mean, Harrison Ford is even in Star Wars. I mean, he's a big actor, right?
Yeah, I thought Woody Harrelson blended in seamlessly. You know, I was worried. So maybe you know, Bill Burr has the capability of allaying all my fears. But when I first saw it, I was like, oh my God, it's Bill Burr?
I didn't even know it was Bill Burr. It had to be pointed out to me. I was like, because it's such a quick shot in the trailer. But anyway, Ian, I think you're going to get a lot of fan service in this show. And I thought, based on you liking Rogue One, because I feel like it's heavy on fan service, that was going to probably enhance your enjoyment. Maybe not.
No, I think that I will like this show. It looks really cool.
You're going to get Disney+.
I mean, even if the show didn't exist at all.
That's the only reason I'm getting Disney+.
Yeah, no, there are a lot of reasons. They have all the Marvel stuff. But I'm sure there's going to be something good there for us.
But
what do you need to get Disney+ for in the next month other than this?
I mean, this will be the driver because it looks like it's going to be pretty cool.
Right. You've seen all the movies that are going to be on there. You've seen them. You probably own most of them.
The first Marvel show is not supposed to premiere on there until like 2021, right?
Yeah, I mean,
Disney+?
Is the conversation, am I going to get Disney+ right away or eventually? Because we're all going to get it eventually.
No. You said you were going to get Disney+ with or without this show.
Yeah.
What's driving you to do it? Let's say there's no Mandalorian. What about it would have you getting it day one?
I'm in Camp Matt. If there's no Mandalorian, I'm not getting this until I see like 3 great reviewed episodes of
Wanda
and Doctor Strange thing, maybe.
It's not a movie. That's a movie.
Whatever other Marvel show is they're going
to
release.
Falcon and Winter Soldier. Mm-hmm. I think you said you were looking forward to that.
Well, that's fine. You guys can camp out in the same camp. I said that I was going to probably get it. Those Marvel things might be kind of cool. There are movies out there that I'd probably want to have.
This would not be
at my beck and call.
This would not be a day one subscription for you without.
No, and that isn't what we were talking about originally that you guys are fucking piling on me about. So calm the fuck down.
No.
Everybody is calm.
Yes. Without it, no. Not a day one subscription.
And Matt and I weren't piling on. Like you made it
You're
sound
being
like,
very sensitive.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You made it sound like, whether on purpose or not, that you would be getting Disney+ within, you know, sometime before The Mandalorian comes out, whether The Mandalorian existed or not.
I'm sorry if that within what I said that was implied.
Yeah, like if The Mandalorian wasn't going to be part of this, if that fucking Obi-Wan show wasn't going to be part of this, I probably wouldn't get Disney+. Because all that Marvel shit, yeah, it may tie in or whatever, but like I said a little bit ago, none of the characters that I really give a shit about.
It really sucks, like, man. These subscription services are turning into little mini cable companies. And it's like, now the TV show is the channel, right? You're like, oh, can I just pick my fucking channels? Now I just want to pick my fucking shows. I don't want 13 subscription services. I don't want Disney+. I want The Mandalorian.
I'd rather blow $20 a month on Hulu.
Finish that for you.
And, you know, blaze through Castle Rock season 2 then.
Right.
Like, that interests me more than any of this stuff on Disney+, sort of including The Mandalorian, but I feel like Mandalorian has such hype on it, and it's Star Wars. I feel
first ever live action Star Wars TV show. It's interesting.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
I like the people in charge of it too, Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau.
Yeah,
hey, Jon Favreau was gonna. He was back. If you go back into the archives of the 300. plus episodes of the McSauce podcast that McSauce we've done.
Plus, are we offering an over-the-top subscription service? Maybe.
That's right, original
maybe
content.
In the future. I'm not going to get it until that solo Paul podcast is available. So, not day one.
So
not
essentially
day one.
For garbage content.
I don't give a shit about the team up Casale and Sharpley. Who could ever fucking care about that?
But Paul and Ian talk music for 2 hours.
Oh,
that's a good show.
I think I'd rather watch a TV show than listen to that.
Mick Music.
But what I'm saying is...
what's the name of it? Paul and Ian Make Music.
We can talk about old our show.
Oh yeah,
old '90s. We can talk about Wizard and old '90s stuff.
That's good stuff. But no, the I keep losing my train of thought here, Ian.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm thinking about McSauce Plus. I mean, I'm ready to do it. Let's do it.
I forgot what I was gonna say.
You were saying that you can go back.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm excited about Jon Favreau being involved because even back when they announced new Star Wars, he was my pick to direct episode 7 before they had chosen a director who's going to make the next Star Wars. I was like, I think, you know, J.J. Abrams' name was thrown around, but I thought maybe he was just a little too stylized. Whereas I thought Jon Favreau could kind of come in and give it that Star Wars look that you just kind of know it when you see it. And I think
it's much like porn
where you know it when you see it.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you don't know because sometimes there's too much.
I always know.
Cause sometimes there's too much talking involved before it gets into the part that, you know,
surprise porn.
The creative team has the potential to absolutely win me over like they did with Rebels. I thought Rebels up until the last season was really fucking good.
Hey.
And that had nothing to do with characters that I already love or am interested in.
So you gave it a chance and you actually watched them build the story. Holy fucking shit.
I gave it. But do you know how small the percentage that is of all the Star Wars products that's actually worked?
I do because
it's really tiny.
I've watched a lot of them. Yeah.
But since it's Dave Filoni and it's Jon Favreau and it looks cool. So, you know. Yeah. Yeah, cool. I'll check it out, but really, I'm just here for that hot Obi-Wan content coming
Obi-Wan
down the line.
Con.
Is that the Star Wars show you're most looking forward to?
Yeah, without a doubt. I'm looking more forward to that than Rise of Skywalker.
Ian, what about you?
I don't give a shit about Obi-Wan. It's fine. I've seen him before. He was better when he was an old man. Tricking people.
I can't argue with that. That's a good take.
Tricking people.
That's what? My favorite Obi-Wan, tricking people as an old guy.
Yeah, like he's about to have a lightsaber duel and you're like, no, I want to see more tricks.
I liked his whole just sneaking around in a robe, tricking stormtroopers. Yeah, misdirection.
So what Star Wars show are you most looking forward to?
The Mandalorian. It looks fucking awesome.
I think maybe I am too. And it's weird to even say that because I loved Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan, but
he ain't gonna trick anybody.
No, until I see a trailer where
you trick people all throughout the fucking
prequels. I wasn't talking, Paul. But until we see the trailer where don't look hurt. You interrupted.
I'm not hurt. I'm appalled that 300 episodes you don't know that I'm gonna do this to you.
Well,
at least once an episode.
Well, I haven't had to correct you for a while, but until I see the trailer where Darth Maul and Obi-Wan are like having a battle or something, then Mandalorian for me.
No, that was already settled in a in-canon project in Rebels, so sorry, buddy. It's in-canon, period.
I'm pretty sure Lucasfilm, if they want that fight, and if they're fucking smart, which I don't know if they are, but if they're smart, they're going to do that, and they're going to crumple up Rebels and throw it in the garbage can, right?
They can just do that.
People can't, Ian, people can't hear your dismissive shrug. But
it wasn't really a fight, though. It was like Obi-Wan putting insane-ass Darth Maul out of his misery.
Yeah. I want to see it. That's what I want to see. That if we get that, then Obi-Wan will be my thing. Tricks or no tricks?
I'm only for old man tricks, Obi-Wan.
Old man trickery.
I hope that's the name of the pilot. I'm like, I'm in!
It's going to be the name of the fucking series. Because right now, Feige's like, fuck, this guy only wants tricks. We had all this cool Darth Maul lightsaber play on the docket, but he just wants tricks.
Bump up the tricks budget.
Quick, get us some dumb stormtroopers in here.
Obi tricks Kenobi.
Get us some idiot farm boy to fall for this guy's tricks. I don't know this droid. I've never seen him before.
I want that rabbit to be in the fucking show so bad.
The space rabbit from the comic book?
No, the tricks rabbit.
I thought you meant
silly rabbit. Star Wars is rabbit. For Obi-Wan.
All right, so when does Mandalorian premiere? It's soon. It's this month, right?
It's this month. Dude, it's like in a week. It's a week from tomorrow.
14th?
12th?
12th, yeah.
Fuck.
Get those wallets out.
$6.99 out of my pocket.
Is that next Tuesday? When's the 12th?
Oh, I don't know. I don't feel like getting my phone out.
Tuesday.
It's Tuesday. Oh, my God, Ian.
We're almost there. Next week, it'll be Mandalorian Eve.
I'm going to stay up till midnight to watch that. I really will.
So, fucking lunatic. So why don't we give our...
Fuck you, man.
Why don't we give our Mandalorian polynomics?
Excitement and expectation for those who are not initiated.
Ian, what's your excitement and expectation?
I'm pretty excited. I give my excitement, fuck man, I really like those trailers. I give my excitement an 8. My expectations a 7. Yeah. I don't know. I think that
7's pretty good. Don't dismiss 7. 7's a good number.
Yeah. It's a Star Wars live action TV show. It's bound to have some bumps. We'll see. It does look like they dumped a shit ton of money into this thing because it looks good. It looks like a feature film. But to be safe, 7.
Mm.
But I'm hyped. 9.
Oh,
what?
I already said I was excited. So
you said an 8.
Did I say an 8? Well, I changed it. 9. I'm fucking juiced. Just like that.
My excitement is a 5. Middle of the road. It doesn't have...
You fucking hate it.
But I'm going to get Disney Plus day one. I'm a 5.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Begrudgingly, somebody put a fucking gun to my head and made me buy it.
That's all 100% true. I'm not really excited about it. It's none of the Star Wars characters that I love.
Man,
it's
character not, Paul over
it's
here
not
tonight.
The part of the Star Wars universe God that damn. I love, but...
You love your characters.
I think it looks really good, and the creators involved are going to hook it up. And my expectation is an 8. I think they're going to win me over, and this is going to be a really cool show. And I am also a TV guy. I am a serialized storytelling guy. I love television format, so that already is in its favor.
Most importantly, you're a hate and see. So this falls right in your sweet spot.
On brand.
Hate it. I gotta pay more for it. I'm unsure. Everybody else is excited. I fucking hate it.
But I'm
until
watching
I see
it day
it,
one.
It's really good.
I probably won't watch it day one. I'm not gonna stay up till midnight to watch it. So Matt, if you're gonna stay up to fucking midnight to watch it, your excitement better be a motherfucking 11.
It's an 8. I'm pretty stoked. I'm so happy that it's so soon. That's, like, very exciting. Why wouldn't I stay up? We go to, like, midnight shows for Star Wars.
Disney Plus isn't doing series dumps, though. They're doing weekly.
No, because they suck. But they're going to do...
I like a nice weekly burn. I do.
I like the process.
No, I don't have time for that. My schedule isn't regimented enough where it's like, okay, I can watch it at this particular time. When I fall in love with a series... I just want to watch it and consume all of it as I want it. I don't want to wait. I don't believe in being teased anymore. That's so 1900s.
This guy, him and Sting, diametrically opposed lovers.
I'm an 8 for excitement.
An expectation?
A 10.
Yeah, you know what? That, you know, fuck you guys. Like, me hating C. Yeah, that's, everyone knows what's going to happen. This is fucking crazy talk.
It's not. It's really not, because some of the best things that I've seen in recent years have been TV shows of really high caliber. I thought the first season of Cobra Kai was almost a 10. I thought the first season of Stranger Things was a 10. I think the Mindhunter show is like a 10. And
those are all great examples.
And I feel like TV this, Matt, to me, has 10 written on it. This has 10 potential. And I expect it to be a 10. And, you know, hey, maybe by like week 3, my excitement, Ian, like for the next episode, will be a 9. Maybe it'll be a 10 to match my expectations.
I'm excited. Bookmark this, Exhaust fans.
A 10. Why not?
You know what? You're right. Dream big.
It's more likely to be a 10 than The Rise of Skywalker.
I think that has no chance. No chance. Zero.
No way. No.
So yes, you're right. It has no... It's more
as
likely.
Usual.
Rise of Skywalker... tops out at a 7. High end.
I don't know if I'm even
absolute
see
high
it
end.
You don't know if you're gonna see it.
You shouldn't. I don't want you to, because if it has any kind of effect on you that like The Last Jedi did, like, we're gonna be in trouble.
I want
for
it to retire
the next 365 days.
I want it to retire from pop culture after Rise of Skywalker.
The Last Jedi.
I'm talking in
That's going to do it for us tonight. My name is Paul McGinty.
Ian Sharpley.
Matt Cassell.
We'll see you next time.
Can I talk now about Disney cucking? Stream cuck. Does that mean that my other streaming services have to watch as Disney fucks me?